This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. This week's round of primaries were a boon for female candidates. Will this wave take its energy into the midterms in November? And another story that could make a splash in the general election, teacher rallies in Raleigh, the latest edition of teacher protest in red states. Will that movement have an impact? We'll talk about that and more with the political junkie Ken Rudin. Hello, Ken.
Hello, Frank.
What do you make of the primaries this week?
Well, I agree about women. The women are the big story in Tuesday's primaries, but I would make it even more specific. I would say Democratic women. And if the New York Times pointed out something this morning, that 26 Democratic women ran for the House in Tuesday's primaries, 12 were successful. Only three Republican women sought a House seat on Tuesday, and only one was successful. So it's not only about women, it's also about Democratic women. And Pennsylvania is the kind of state that with taken away with the courts getting rid of the Republican redistricting gerrymandering stuff, Democrats have a shot of picking up a bunch of seats there, and that could be very significant in November. And one quick thing also, that another thing about the Democratic primaries on Tuesday, a lot of liberals and progressives were beating centrist and establishment choices. And I don't know if that's good for the Democrats in November, but it does show that the left-wing base of the Democratic Party is very energized.
One thing it might show is a kind of energy, energizing that sector of the electorate that might show up in November, and that could spell change.
That's absolutely true. I mean, we've said this for a long time, that we saw this in Virginia last year, in Alabama special, in the special congressional district election in Pennsylvania. The Democrats seem much more energized, much more excited. Republicans more like saying, we're in big trouble. And it's funny that a lot of Republicans who are retiring say that the party is in big trouble, but yet when the Republicans who are running for office, and we saw it last week in Ohio, Indiana, even West Virginia and in North Carolina, they say, no, backing Donald Trump is the way to victory. I'm not sure that's the right strategy, but that's what the Republican candidates seem to be saying.
Well, Ken, let me put this one to you. It may be too early to try to parse this, but there, you know, Donald Trump has picked up a couple of points, although he's falling again in the polls slightly, but basically he's picked up a couple of points in the polls. And yet we're seeing these candidates that are supporting Trumpism go by the wayside, and this surge in sort of progressive energy at the polls. Is there a split? Is there Donald Trump, the character, the charismatic figure, such as he is, who engenders a lot of support, and then there's Trumpism, which is falling in support nationally? Is there a distinction to be made there?
Well, that's a good point, but also it just seems like this is definitely Donald Trump's party. I mean, you talk about previous Republican issues that the Republican Party and its candidates always seem to support, like free trade, for example, like more opportunity for immigration, things like that. And even climate change. But it seems like the new Republican Party, the Trump-led party, has become basically a Donald Trump extension. And so, yes, you know, there is Donald Trump who gives a good speech, and yes, there's Donald Trump who excites the rallies. But Trumpism itself, what's going on here, I mean, almost every analyst thinks that the Democrats are going to pick up the 23 or so seats needed to make Nancy Pelosi speaker again. And we could talk at some other point about whether Nancy Pelosi should be the leader of the Democrats. But the point is, Democrats are likely to pick up the House, and maybe they have a shot at the Senate, too. And, of course, if that happens, then Trumpism may be replaced by impeachmentism, and then the country will be split down the middle again.
Absolutely. And I wonder if another harbinger of change is not the rallies that we've seen in red states, including right here in North Carolina, teachers' rallies. These are people who are, again, sort of have been on the other side, right? For a long time, Republicans have been quite successful in putting teachers down and keeping teacher pay low and breaking teacher unions when it came to Wisconsin. And now it seems things are turning the other way.
Of course, there's no teachers' union in North Carolina, as you, of course, know. But that's interesting. We keep talking about, especially on the Women's March on January 21st, the day after Trump was sworn in, and also the rallies about gun violence we've seen in the aftermath of what happened in Parkland in Florida. So we talk about women, we talk about guns, but we're not talking much about teachers. And yet in states, as we see in North Carolina now, but in other states like West Virginia, Arizona, Oklahoma, other teachers are just saying enough is enough. We're underpaid. The legislature is not giving the education, the kids, the supplies and the support that they need. So watch teachers. Like next week's primary, for example, in Kentucky, you have a lot of teachers and former teachers running for office before. We never saw that before. So it seems like the teachers themselves could be another catalyst for change in politics.
All right. And again, this difference between Trumpism and Trump, the idea that the Republicans for a long time have been running against public education. They want to privatize charter schools, vouchers. The system is broken and teachers are paid too much. That's been their mantra. And now we're seeing this wave. So it will be interesting to see if there is some kind of ideological change here in the works. Let's talk about foreign policy for just a minute. North Korea now threatens to pull out of the planned summit. We were all surprised there was going to be one, maybe less surprised that there's not going to be one. What's going on here?
Well, there's several things. First of all, Kim Jong-un seems to be running the show as always. He is so, we talk about how mercurial and unpredictable Donald Trump is. Well, I think he needs to learn a lesson from Kim Jong-un because he's the epitome of unpredictability. And so two things. First of all, the fact is that, the fact that the U.S. and South Korea held a military exercise this week while they're talking about preparing for a summit on June 12th, to me that seems like a big mistake. At least put off these joint exercises, until Trump and Kim sit down. So I thought that was a mistake. And plus the fact that you have hardliners, I'm not blaming the U.S. for this, but you have hardliners in the American government like John Bolton, the national security advisor, who's talking about, look, we're not going to have anything, we're not going to talk about lifting sanctions at all until North Korea eliminates its entire nuclear program. And of course, North Korea and Kim say that we're not going to do that unilaterally and then get sanctions back. So Kim is angry. I don't know if the summit is off, but certainly he's unhappy. And of course, right now both sides are trying to work out deals and fix some language to make sure that the meeting does happen on June 12th after all.
And also this latest news highlights some divisions within the administration over policy on North Korea. You had John Bolton talking about a Libya strategy. We're talking about taking out the leader. That's what happened in Libya. The Libyan leader, Gaddafi, ends up dead in a pipe. So when you talk about the Libya strategy, that's a pretty profound. And then on the other hand, you have, Mike Pompeo saying that that's not it. And wait a minute, it isn't just a little confusion there. Here's Bolton and Trump back to back on whether or not the Libya strategy would apply to North Korea. Let's listen.
We have very much in mind the Libya model from 2003, 2004.
Well, the Libyan model isn't a model that we have at all when we're thinking of North Korea.
All right, there's National Security Advisor John Bolton first, then Donald Trump speaking yesterday. What do you make of that?
Well, see, Kim Jong-un is not a fool. He remembers exactly what happened to Gaddafi. As you said, the United States, under the Bush and Bush administration, got him to give up all his nuclear weapons. And then somehow, of course, that's not what made him vulnerable. But not long after, in the Obama administration, he was deposed by his own people and murdered. And Kim says if you expose your weaknesses early, as Gaddafi did in Libya, this is not a path we want to go by. So for John Bolton to say that, I like the Libya model, Kim heard those words. And so John Bolton is probably more of a waving a red flag in front of a bull than any kind of rhetoric you're hearing from Donald Trump. So the fact is that Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, and John Bolton, the National Security Advisor, do not seem to be on the same page as far as who is more aggressive and who is believing in diplomacy. So there's a battle going on within the United States government as well.
Finally, Senate Intelligence Committee said it agrees with U.S. intelligence agencies. Russia did interfere with the 2016 election, helped Donald Trump win. That conclusion, of course, at odds with the House Intelligence Committee. What's going on here?
Well, you know something, kudos. I never say the word kudos. I hate that word. But kudos to Richard Burr and Mark Warner, the respective Republican and Democratic leaders on the Senate Intelligence Committee. They agree with the CIA and the NSA and the FBI and all those things, saying that Russia did interfere in the election in 2016, and they were trying to help Donald Trump, compared to what the House Intelligence Committee and its Republicans, led by Devin Nunes, are saying, that it's all a witch hunt and really the bad guys are the CIA and the intelligence agency. So Burr seems to be standing along with U.S. intelligence agencies and definitely standing opposed to what the House Republicans are talking about.
And as we've said many times before, this is not a legal question when it comes to impeachment and whether or not the president was involved. It's a political question. So then the number of our elections loom even larger. Only 30 seconds left. Trump's previous Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, with a not very veiled attack on the president's integrity.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting. I mean, he talked about the dangers to democracy. I mean, one wishes he said that when he was Secretary of State. But you know, once you get fired by a tweet, maybe your courage stands up. But it was very instrumental. He didn't mention Trump by name, but it was clear who he was talking about in the talking about fake information and threats to democracy.
Ken Rudin is the political junkie. Always a pleasure. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Frank.
Just ahead, long before Rosa Parks, Pauli Murray was getting arrested on the bus for not getting off and not taking her rightful place, according to the law of the land at the time. She was a trailblazer for blacks and for women. Patricia Bell Scott joins us to talk about that unsung hero on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.